Hello, and welcome to American Hit Radio. Can you believe we are about to begin part 63?
Stunning.
In our series of shows dedicated to the music of the Beatles?
Unbelievable.
I can hardly believe it myself, but when we started this, if I were to guess, I would have said, yeah, we're going to break 30. Because I did, you know, the Beatles' 13 studio albums, all the singles.
Right.
Like, yeah, you can't do an album a show, because although you'd like to think you could do that, but with all the other stuff that was going on, it just added up and added up and
whew. Just keeps on coming.
But we're getting there, folks. You are listening to American Hit Radio. We're here every Wednesday and Friday live from 5 p.m. until 6 p.m. Aired also on Sundays and Mondays in the morning and here on WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. Heidi Morales Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host here as well.
Always with you.
Loving it. Helping to keep me on track and correct me when I stray.
It's my favorite part of my day.
Obviously, you know, I'm really good at, you know, like for example, like, you know, getting the name wrong because I'm just going from, you're good at correcting me. I appreciate that. Well, we're picking up today. Last week, we were covering an awful lot of events that were happening at this point in time in the Beatles' career. We're in 1969. We were able to cover Paul's marriage, John's marriage, an awful lot of the horrendous stuff that was happening at Apple and starting their relationship with Alan Klein. Started, decent enough, ended quite differently.
Yeah.
Quite differently. But our soundtrack for all that information was we were able to play George Harrison's Electronic Sounds album as a backdrop for all of that news. So now we've got to pick up where we left off. And essentially, though, as that show conveyed, you could tell that, you know, after the whole contentious White Album stuff that had gone on, which we spent weeks discussing, and then the disastrous Get Back sessions, essentially, by this point in time, the Beatles ceased to exist. Really, as a band, anyway, they really weren't doing much work together.
Yeah, they're just like together as a business pretty much towards the end, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, virtually all work, musical work, came to a halt for, you know, this part of, you know, the middle part of 1969. The band essentially argued about direction or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we just said, management, legal representation, taking apart their really poorly thought out idea of what Apple could be as a company. So because of all this, you know, Beatles music was suffering. Beatles product was suffering.
To say the least.
The Beatles didn't release an album since the White Album, which isn't that bad at this point in time. But here they are like recording another one and they shelve it. So no album would come out for almost a full year between the White Album and eventually when they finally were able to put out Abbey Road. And their last single, Hey Jude, was already 8 months old by the spring of 1969. So, you know, from a fan's perspective, this was a virtual drought. And now that with, you know, Get Back being shelved indefinitely because nobody was happy with the project, it really appeared unlikely that any new music would have been made public for who knows how long. Basically, the miracle of all this is that somehow the band did manage to pull themselves together to allow some of the material to trickle out. And they released two singles within 1 month of one another. Now, that wasn't too hard to do because they were able to cull something out of the Get Back sessions. They had grabbed the song, title song actually, Get Back, and they decided that they would have that produced as a single. So the single version, as it came out, released in April in Great Britain, I believe it was the first week of May in America. It's essentially the same version as the LP version, the version that we played while we played the album, Let It Be. But there's a little bit of a difference because they added a little bit of echo to it. And they also tacked the coda onto the end of the single. What it's before the coda, it's really the exact same take.
That's
right. What's on the album.
Right.
On the album, what
amazing
they did.
Amazing how that can change it, the feeling so drastically.
Exactly. Because one feels like a studio album. The other one feels live. Because what they did for the other version was you have John doing that opening remark about Sweet Lorette. She thought she was a cleaner. And they tacked on his comments at the end about, we hope you passed the audition. made you feel as though that was the final rooftop version,
right,
which was not the case. Phil Spector took that bit of talking from John and dubbed it onto the single, onto the album. In this case, they took the exact same take of the track, but the Beatles didn't play a coda. But when they went back to try to do it again with a proper ending, they still liked that other version better. So they edited the coda onto the end of the exact same take that was on the album.
Very interesting.
If that's not too confusing. The song ended up being number one for 5 weeks in America, if for no other reason than that there was such an amazing hunger for new Beatles material. It was the first Beatles single that was actually credited with another artist on the name. It was credited to the Beatles with Billy Preston on the label, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
Also features John Lennon actually playing lead guitar. This session actually went down on that day when George was actually missing in action.
Oh, yeah.
During some of the contention that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of John's lead that is featured on this. It's also the very first single that was released in real true stereo in the United States.
Ho-ho.
Up until this point, all the other singles were mono. So this is the first stereo single. Let's hear that track then, the single version of Get Back.
You could really tell that they were enjoying recording with Billy Preston. You can kind of hear the happiness in Paul's voice when he's singing and the keys come in.
Definitely true. It's really kind of very, you know, it's a good observation on your part, I think. Yeah, because I mean, that's exactly why George brought him in. let's bring some peace to the, you know, to the scenario. And the Beatles, you know, normally didn't have a keyboard player to play with, except
right.
whatever they were capable of doing. I mean, every now and then they would get George Martin to play a part, but they never really had a keyboard player to rely on.
And he was never as funky as Billy Preston.
Nah, that's for sure, right. So it was a different flavor for the band. And if you were a Beatles fan, it was, you know, that would at the time have been like the non-LP single that was coming out with no album to relate it to, because it would be a long time before the public would get to hear, well, over a year anyway, before the public would get to hear the Get Back sessions as they appeared on the album Let It Be. So after all of that work, that was the result of it, really, was that song, was that single. But every single has a B-side, as we know. And this one, of course, had a song written by John Lennon, which turned out to be a non-LP B-side, because when the album Let It Be came out, this song was not on the album. So this really was a song that was simply a 45 RPM B-side and nothing but a B-side for quite a long time when it first appeared. Still one of John's most beloved love songs. Strange love song, but beautiful nonetheless. Here's the B-side then of Get Back. Beatles, of course, with Don't Let Me Down.
Thank you.
That is by far my favorite track with Billy Preston.
Awesome.
He adds so much to that
it's great.
Track. And again, you can hear like how John is like really getting into it. And you, it's now that
everybody,
you mention it,
it sounds like it.
It was a very enlivening thing. So that gave the impression that there was really nothing wrong. That, what do you mean? You know, the sessions weren't, you know, that there weren't good results. Those songs are, you know, fantastic. Not one of that's, you know, the Beatles are one of the most incredible bands in all of history for putting out fantastic two-sided singles. I mean, there's obviously, you know, Come Together and Something, for one example, and Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields Forever. You know, I mean, double-sided hits don't get much better than that, you know?
Really?
But this one was no slouch either, you know, with Get Back on One Side and Don't Let Me Down on the Other.
Yeah.
Simpler, but still, like, you know, great, great material.
Yeah.
And, of course, the, you know, a Beatle-hungry public drove it right to number one, where it stayed in America for 5 weeks. It was also the last Beatles number one in the UK, which is odd.
Aww.
Telling, because the Beatles had a few more singles to go. A Ballad of John and Yoko, Come Together and Something, Let It Be, Long and Winding Road. So it's odd that those did not hit number one in the UK. When I believe...
Strange, even.
I think all of them hit... Well, we'll get to that, but I believe they'll hit number one in America. We're going to talk about basically the events now, just a couple of things leading up to the middle of the summer. And what was happening. We'll go back to February 22nd first. I'm going to read again. This is coming straight from the Beatles Chronicle, which keeps a day-by-day account of what was happening with the band after the Get Back sessions are essentially over.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially over. This is how they basically explain it. There was, at most, only a fine dividing line between the end of sessions for Get Back and the beginning of sessions for what was to become Abbey Road. Although work on the latter did not begin in earnest until July, a number of that album's songs were well underway by then. Get Back filming certainly ended on January 31st, however. One such song was John's I Want You, released as I Want You, She's So Heavy on the Abbey Road album, first rehearsed at Apple on January 29th, and now recorded properly in this session on February 22nd at Trident with 35 takes of the basic track plus a guide vocal.
Huh.
But why were they at Trident, and why this three-week gap since January 31st? I mean, the filming ended on January 31st. They wait 3 weeks, and then they go to Trident? They just had this whole studio put into their own basement at Apple, right?
Yeah.
Well, it says, and answers the question, Trident, because with filming now complete, Apple Studios was undergoing a rebuild and a technological rethink. Don't forget, we had Magic Alex down there.
Right.
Doing all sorts of goofy things.
Doing all kinds of crazy crackpot stuff.
What they were doing was they were basically recording on borrowed equipment.
Right.
From EMI.
Right. So that would have to totally get ripped out and redone.
Exactly. So they gave EMI back all the stuff that they had borrowed, and they had to rip out the
junk.
Right, the ridiculous stuff that was being done by Alex so they could have it, you know, done in some sort of, you know, basically a technological rethink, as it reads here. But the Beatles...
That was awful nice of them to call it that.
Right. But the Beatles remained keen to work in an independent studio rather than going back to Abbey Road. The delay, because of the February 7th to 15th hospitalization of George Harrison for the removal of tonsils as well, and early February visits to the United States by Glyn Johns and Billy Preston, who were now both back in London to contribute to this session that they were recording with John. It's interesting that the Beatles wanted to wait for Billy Preston to come back to even play some songs.
I guess they really liked him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it shows. It definitely shows. I mean, you can hear... When even at one point, one of those songs that you just played where Billy's harmonizing with Paul and Paul just gets so happy, like, oh, listen to us, you know.
it's a shame that there wasn't other stuff that was actually released, because, I mean, the only material you're going to hear is that with Billy Preston on it is that single and the stuff where he was featured on the record Let It Be. But they, according to this date on February 22nd, there are a number of takes where they recorded I Want You, She's So Heavy with Billy Preston on keyboards.
Oh.
Now, on February 25th, just a couple days later, The same book, Chronicle, reads thusly. Perhaps as a 26th birthday present to himself, George went into EMI alone on this day and, with only Ken Scott in the control room, recorded elaborate vocal, guitar, and piano demos of three of his latest compositions. Two takes of Old Brown Shoe, which was to become the Beatles' next B-side, actually just a month after the Get Back and Don't Let Me Down single. And one take of Something, which of course was going to be issued on Abbey Road, and also the A-side of the subsequent single. And two takes of All Things Must Pass, which was never recorded by the Beatles other than in Get Back rehearsal form when they were in Twickenham, which was also eventually became the title track of George's triple album, which came out on November 30th, 1970, well after the band had broken apart and went their own separate ways. Which studio he used and the session start-finish times, none of this was documented. The recordings were also mixed on that same date, so the acetate discs could not be cut. Rather interesting then, though. Here's George, probably a little bit smarting by having to go through that whole situation with the Get Back sessions and really not seeing his material getting used except for the one blues song, that he said, I'm going to go in and finish up some of these ideas because there wasn't enough continuity for him to get the band all together on the same page to work with him.
Right.
To do them properly. So here it is, George's 26th birthday, and putting down these tracks on that date, as I said, February 25th, 1969. First, we'll hear his version of All Things Must Pass, recorded on that day.
Sunrise doesn't last all morning. A cloudburst doesn't last all day. Seems my love is up and has left you with no warning. It's not always been this great. All things must pass. All things must pass away. Sunset doesn't last all evening. A mind can blow those clouds away. After all this, my love is up and must be leaving. It's not always been this great. All things must pass. All things must pass away. Another day, our darkness only stays a night time. In the morning, it will fade away. Daylight is good at arriving at the right time. It's not always gonna be this great. All things must pass. All things must pass away. All things must pass. All things must pass away.
Not not only a beautiful song, but a poignant song as well, with what was happening with the Beatles. I'm sure that George might have been thinking of 100 different things when he wrote that song. Obviously, an awful lot of the culture and the teachings which he had gotten from India.
Right.
But you can't help but think how that song has got a huge amount of relevance about dealing with the fact that, you know, his group and his friends and what they, you know, represented for so long, that the absolute beauty and incredible success that was the Beatles was slipping away from them right in front of them. And they were, even though they were all there in the same room, they were not capable of necessarily getting past all of the problems that were beginning to overwhelm them. And it was pulling them apart, regardless of whatever effort they were going to make at this point. And so when you hear George singing about how all things must pass, it's really hard to miss the poignancy in the lyrics.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the songs that he did on that day. He did three. He also created a demo for Old Brown Shoe on this same day. This is one that he spent the most time on with overdubs and stuff like that. Besides, you know, the vocal, he started with a piano track, which is very unusual. George is not a piano player. You very rarely get to hear it. But he was actually, he found a couple of cool chords, which is actually what led him to write the song. And then after he had the chords, he was thinking in terms of opposites, you know, up, down, left, right, wrong, things like that, and how he could incorporate those things into some sort of a lyrical theme.
Hmm.
And I love the opening line. I want to love that's right, but right is only half of what's wrong. Like, oh, very clever, you know, things like that. But I'm not sure if I even got it exactly right, but something like that. He also overdubs his electric guitar onto that track. I think it's three different guitar parts on this at least. Eventually, the demo was good enough for him to bring it to the band so that the band would then record their own version so that it would be released in time to make the B-side of the Beatles' upcoming 20th single. So, which is to say that, obviously, the Get Back and Don't Let Me Down was their 19th seven-inch release. But on that same day, then, let's hear this track. Again, you know, George by himself, George with George and George and George, recording a demo version of Old Brown Shoe.
Short-haired girl, sometimes worthy twice as long. I'm stepping out this old brown shoe. Baby, I'm in love with you. I'm so glad you came. You won't be the same now, I'm telling you. You know you picked me up from worse and tried to drag me down. But when I see your smile replacing every thoughtless frown, you've got me escaping from this zoo. Baby, I'm in love with you. I'm so glad you came here. Won't be the same now, I'm telling you. If I grow up, I'll be a singer. Something I'd hate. not late. For your sweet top lip, I'm in the queue. Baby, I'm in love with you. I'm so glad you came. You won't be the same now, I'm telling you. Yes, I'm so glad you came. You won't be the same now when I'm with you.
I always thought, still do think, that that is perhaps the single most underrated B-side of any of the Beatles' 45s. Most of the others, they get their due. You know, they charted, they're hits in their own right.
Right.
And to me, that song could have been a hit in its own right, and yet it's often just, you know, subjugated to the also-rans. It's so well recorded in its released version, you know, which we'll be playing later on in the show, actually, but... You can hear right there that George, I think he knew that it was a well-written song. He's just spending time with the overdubs. The lyrics are excellent. And they work on so many levels. There's so many different things that you can think about with what he's trying to say on that song. And what's funny is that with all of the effort that he was putting into that song, the next song that he did is the exact opposite. He it was probably so new that he just wanted to basically see what it... What happened if he just put it down. Mm-hmm. So when he was done working with that song, before he left the studio, he decided to make a recording with just him singing and his guitar, nothing else, and then walk out. So it's as simple of a demo as demos can possibly get. And it was the very first time that anybody besides George Harrison got to hear what would eventually become the very first A-side written by George. Here's
wow.
The original, very first time ever demo of George performing the song Something alone in the studio.
Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover. Something in the way she woos me. I don't want to leave now. You know I believe in how. Something in her smile she knows. But I don't need no other lover. Something in her style that shows me I don't want to leave now. You know I believe in how. You're asking me Thank you.
Amazing. You know, it might not have seemed it at the time, but that was one heck of a productive 26th birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
Putting down those three tracks back to back all in the same day. And like I said, one of them goes on to become one of the Beatles' most beautiful singles, Old Brown Shoe, the B-side of the upcoming single, and All Things Must Pass, becoming the title track for his upcoming, for what would eventually become his solo album. It's really incredible. And
amazing.
Think about this also. I mean, that being that raw of a first take, the lyrics and the structure of the song are completely intact there. It wasn't really changed at all.
Not much.
You remove the lyrics that he added over what would have been the solo bit, and you have the structure exactly there. Just take out those couple of lines where it seemed like he was ad-libbing his vocal there anyway.
Right.
So, pretty incredible. Reading from the anthology booklet, Anthology 3, where that track is, if you wanted to get that track, it's commercially available on Anthology 3. All three of those tracks actually appeared, oddly enough, not in chronological order. I don't know why they did that, but they're all on the second disc of Anthology 3 by the Beatles. But in the liner notes, it tells me this. Shortly after taping this demo, George participated in a session during which Joe Cocker became the first artist, ahead of the Beatles even, to record this composition.
So, interesting.
Isn't that incredible? So Joe Cocker recorded this before the Beatles recorded it. His version, however, did not come out, wasn't released until November of 1969, by which time Abbey Road and the single by the Beatles had already been issued. Which, I mean, that's just the way that stuff works. You can't, the songwriter can say who gets primary release. That's the rule. So I'm sure that's what happened there. George was probably able to hold Joe Cocker back from releasing his before the Beatles. You're listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. Heidi and I are here every Wednesday and Friday live, doing more or less what we're doing now. This Friday edition of our show we call How Music Changed, which is dedicated to playing what we consider to be various versions of the 250 most important artists and or events of the history of recorded music. Our series lately has been dedicated to the Beatles, playing every single officially released track by the Beatles during their existence, which includes the solo albums that came out while the band was existing and the stuff that eventually got released later, like the radio shows, the live shows, the Anthology 3 stuff, which is why it's taken us 63 shows to get this far.
That's why it takes so long to do this.
Right. If you like this show, if you're interested in this series, we have the entire series of shows, including this one soon. So all 63 shows are available to be heard by you whenever you care to hear them on our website. Just go on any, doesn't matter, just, you know, get on your computer, on the internet, look for American Hit Radio or AmericanHitNetwork.com, same thing, and it'll take you to our homepage, and you'll see the How Music Changed series of shows on the right side of the homepage. The most recent shows will be looking right at you, which right now I believe is Beatles 61 and 62. But there's a See More button when you click that, or you say See All Shows, I think is what it says, actually. You click on the See All Shows, and naturally the page opens up, and you'll see the entire series of Beatles shows. You can play 62 straight hours, 63, including this show, 63 straight hours of Beatles history, interspersed or ruined, only by me talking between all the tracks. But there's a lot of history there, obviously. 63 hours worth of Beatles history, I think that speaks for itself. So if you're interested, please help yourself to do that. And if you're interested, you can let me know what you think. You can write to us there as well. I love commentary and input. It's always useful. By the way, we will be continuing when we finish with the Beatles. We're going to be going into taking the way back time machine to going back into the early 20s. And we're going to get back to the earliest of the male blues singers, which we didn't really cover. The male blues singers who were around at that time were the ones that were really bringing about what the blues were about when we covered our Birth of the Blues show. Now, we did a number of other blues-related shows and or artists. We covered a lot of the New Orleans music, which obviously stemmed from the blues. We covered a number of shows on Bessie Smith. obviously very much a blues artist, but that was commercial blues. So there's a significant difference. And I'll make that point when we get to that. We'll finish the Beatles first, but just letting you know, we're going to be getting back to some pretty cool stuff in about 3 or 4 weeks when we finish the Beatles. All right, then. That being said, let's cut forward now a little bit to the events in April of 1969. April 14th, to be exact. Relevant in a number of ways because of, the next single that was about to come out by the Beatles. Again, I'm going to read this directly from the Chronicle for that date. An important Beatles session, yet with only John and Paul's participation. Ringo was elsewhere, filming The Magic Christian. George, as it says here, so it was said, was out of the country. Either way, he was definitely on vacation. Both, anyway, were kept unawares of this session until after it had taken place. The song being recorded was John's The Ballad of John and Yoko, subtitled They're Gonna Crucify Me at that time. The subtitle in parenthesis was dropped before release. A chronicle of the newly married Lennon's recent weeks, obviously. Later in the year, John recorded these sort of songs with his alternative outlet, the Plastic Ono Band, and had the band existed at this time, The Ballad and John and Yoko would probably have been theirs. But for the present, John's solo musical vehicle was the Beatles, still. With not only producer George Martin back in the control room, but also balance engineer Jeff Emerick, which is a big deal. If you remember, he quit during the White Album sessions. John and Paul enjoyed a highly productive day, completing the recording from 2:30 until 9 p.m., then mixing it into stereo that same day from 9 until 11 p.m., ending the session 1 hour ahead of schedule. It thus became the Beatles' first stereo single in Britain, and consequently their first recording not having to be mixed into mono. Or not mixed into mono at all. Despite the wrangling, arguments, and bitter business squabbles so widely reported of them in 1969, and which we covered a great deal of over the past few weeks, John and Paul's great musical understanding and togetherness shone through from start to finish. First, they set about perfecting a basic track for acoustic guitar and vocal, which was John, and drums, which was played by Paul, done in 11 takes and then overdubbed onto take 10. Paul played bass, John's lead guitar, then a second lead guitar by John. Paul added piano, backing vocal, maracas, and finally, percussive thumps on the backside of an acoustic guitar by John. Backed with George's old brown shoe, The Ballad of John and Yoko was issued as a single in Britain on Friday, May 30th, while Get Back was still at number one, which is very odd. Very rare when you release a single that's going to compete with your own single. Very strange. And I misspoke when I said that Get Back was the last UK number one. Actually, it was Ballad of John and Yoko. This was their last UK number one hit single. Hmm. The way the song came about is Lennon actually brought the song to McCartney's home on that very day. On April 14th, before they took it into record. And according to Yoko, this is Yoko's quote, Paul knew that people were being nasty to John, and he just wanted to make it well for him, said Ono. Paul has a very brotherly side to him. So Paul heard John play the song for him in a rush, said, okay, let's go in and just do it. And since Ringo and George weren't available, they just decided to go in and do it together. It was really that simple. And it was kind of funny because you hear on the bootleg session recordings, I bet this when everything was bootlegged by the Beatles, you can actually hear like Lennon and McCartney joking about the fact that their partners are missing. Like when McCartney is playing drums, you hear Lennon turn to him and say, go a bit faster, Ringo. And then McCartney responds back to him, okay, George. As I said, also, it's interesting because this session marked Jeff Emerick returning as the Beatles recording engineer, as he had quit during the White Album sessions 9 months earlier. So it's a while since the Beatles worked with Jeff Emerick. Welcome back, Jeff. Now, we covered the events of this song, what was happening last week, the specific details of John trying to find a place to get married, going down to basically to Gibraltar, unable to find somebody to marry them there because the captain didn't have a wedding license and because Yoko didn't have the right papers, how they had to call up Peter Brown and say that maybe they could, you know, go somewhere. The story basically explains itself. It's just a true-to-life day in the life, essentially, of John and Yoko. Cool little song as it is. Here is the hit single.
Standing in the dock at Southampton, trying to get to Holland or France. The man in the Mac says, you've got to go back. You know they didn't even give us a chance. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're going to crucify me. Finally made the plane into Paris, honeymooning down by the Seine. Peter Brown called to say, you can make it okay. You can get married in Gibraltar near Spain. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're gonna crucify me. Drove from Paris to the Amsterdam Hill.
So cool to hear that single coming out, and when you know just how, you know, bad things really were, seeing how, you know, the two primary songwriters of the Beatles could push their differences aside and have that much fun in the studio and get it done in a day, you know, basically written and recorded.
Yeah, they
like
knocked that one out.
Just totally knocked out. I can, from a personal perspective, honestly recall remembering that, you know, I was allowed to buy like a single a week, I think, back then. My parents, I was, you know, basically with my allowance, I could buy one single. And I remember it was weird because I had to choose between Get Back or The Ballad of John and Yoko. And it's so, you know, like it's such a strange thing to have the Beatles competing with themselves on the charts. And I remember as a kid, I chose Ballad of John and Yoko. It was just the energy of the song. It was also maybe due to the fact that the song was originally getting a decent amount of airplay, and then suddenly it was kind of pulled. A lot of stations began to ban it because of complaints that John was sacrilegious about how they're going to
crucify it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was seemed inappropriate, and the word that he and the way that he says Christ was seen as a swear word.
Oh yeah.
So they said, okay, that's enough. So the song eventually got banned on an awful lot of American radios. It even got banned in Spain. Franco, the Spanish government, Franco was still in charge of Spain. And he objected to the fact that John sang that you can get married in Gibraltar near Spain, as far as Franco was concerned, Gibraltar was Spain.
Oh.
So he was like, wait a minute, there was an awful lot of debate about that because the UK still claimed ownership to it. And he said, no, we banned that single. It's ours. So John couldn't win for losing in that regard.
Oh, dear.
But nevertheless, the song sold because people like me wanted to hear it, even if they weren't going to play it on the radio. Now, we got a bunch of Beatles quotes to read, specifically in regard to that song, before we move on. I'll give a first quote to Ringo. The Ballad of John and Yoko only had Paul of the other Beatles on it, but that was okay. Why Don't We Do It in the Road was just Paul and me, and it went out as a Beatle track, too. We had no problems with that. There's good drums on the Ballad of John and Yoko, too. I agree. Paul plays really, really good drums on that track. John's quote now. The follow-up to Get Back is Ballad of John and Yoko. It's something I wrote, and it's like an old-time ballad. It's just the story of us getting married, going to Paris, going to Amsterdam, all that. It's Johnny B. Paperback Writer. I don't regard it as a separate record scene. It's the Beatles' next single, simple as that. The story came out that only Paul and I were on the record, but I wouldn't have bothered publicizing that. It doesn't mean anything. It just so happened that there were only two of us there. And George was abroad and Ringo was on the film and he couldn't come that night. Because of that, it was a choice of either remixing or doing a new one. And you always go for doing a new one instead of fiddling about with an old one. So we did. And it turned out well. George Martin now, the Beatles engineer. John and Yoko got better as they went along. Once they got down into their sensible period, so to speak, it was nice working with them. John would bring me a cassette of different things he had made and say, can you make something out of this? I would try to do things for him because he wasn't terribly good technically. I enjoyed working with John and Yoko on the Ballad of John and Yoko. It was just the two of them and Paul. When you think about it, in a funny kind of way, it was the beginning of their own label and their own way of recording. It was hardly a Beatle track, yet it was a Beatle track. It was a kind of thin end of the wedge as far as they were concerned. John had already mentally left the group anyway, and I think that was just the beginning of it all. Last quote to John then. The Ballad of John and Yoko, by the way, was banned over here in the USA. So what they did was, because they don't like the word Christ, unless you're wearing a white robe, you can't say Christ here. They turned it around so it would go, you know it ain't easy. It's kind of true, kind of funny. Now, the events of that song, we're going to hear firsthand next week. Next week, we're going to be able to take a look at, for the next Beatles Show 64, we're going to be looking at the last of the Beatles solo albums that we'll be covering during the Beatles coverage. John and Yoko's wedding album needs to be discussed and covered. So we'll be able to have an awful lot of history there while we play some of the material from that album as well. So you'll be hearing what was going down in Amsterdam.
Okay.
At that point in time. All right, then. Every single has a B-side, as I said. We had heard the demo of this song earlier. Now we can hear the actual song itself, one of my favorite and uncelebrated B-sides by the Beatles. I love this track so much. George's tune, Old Brown Shoe, in its official Beatles-recorded version.
Now.
tell you, man, from a musician's perspective,
mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite Beatles songs.
It's wild.
I love the playing on that track.
Yeah.
George's solo is fantastic. It's got a great tone. The way he formulated his lead on it is so well thought out. I've heard it compared to Clapton in some ways, but I think his tone is fatter, richer. The ideas are just brilliant. And that skipping drum beat is so fun. That's an underutilized beat. You don't really hear that used very often, really, almost ever. It's not that it's complicated, don't get me wrong, but it's got this great sense of forward motion because of the way that it constantly is skipping its way through the verses. And then he's smart enough to have it resolved to a regular 4-4 beat on the bridge. Just a really great song all around. Well written. Like I said, George had a very productive... This is probably the most George-based show that we've done other than his solo albums.
Yeah.
Considering we had three demos and an awesome B-side that was his. So, well done, George. It bodes well for your future solo career. Well, we will be back next week. I wish I had time for Gan, but once again, these hours just slip away so much. I was hoping I'd fit in another single. We will get to it maybe next week. And when we also play a bit from the Wedding album and we discuss John as he more or less makes his permanent move away from the Beatles. And we'll cover that again with Beatles Part 64. But thank you, everybody, for listening. It's been a lot of fun, and we'll see you next week. Take care, everyone. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.